This is Upstate's HealthLink on Air. Linda Cohen here with you. Some cardiac arrhythmias place patients at risk for sudden death, but a medical device called the implantable cardiac defibrillator can prevent this outcome. Here with more on this and how it works is Dr. Trajan Angel, Assistant Professor of Medicine specializing in heart and vascular conditions and the founding partner of the Heart Group of Syracuse, and Amy Tetrault, registered nurse and the Associate Director of the Heart and Vascular Center at Upstate Medical University. Welcome to you both. Thanks for being here today.
Thank you.
So this implantable cardiac defibrillator can save lives. What is it, Dr. Angel, and how does it work?
Devices to help people with abnormal heart conditions, rhythm, abnormality mainly, have been around for more than half a century now. Essentially, just briefly, you have two large groups of abnormal rhythms that can hurt people. One would be the slow rhythm group, and for that, a pacemaker would bring up the pace to the minimum required heart rate. And then you have people like the ones with heart failure, history of heart attacks, who are at a high risk of having fast abnormal rhythms, which essentially can bring upon such patients what's called sudden cardiac death. It's a very fast rhythm that essentially has the pumping chambers, we call it fibrillate, essentially twitching very fast and not pumping effectively.
Is that what they call atrial fibrillation, or is it both kinds?
This is ventricular fibrillation.
This is ventricular.
The atria are the upper chambers of the heart, but the truly life-threatening conditions are the ones affecting the lower chambers, the ventricles. So that's where if one had a heart attack and there's scarring left after, you can have a short circuit, let's say, around a scar like that. And the risk, by now we have very good science to show that the risk of having sudden cardiac death due to a fast rhythm like this, like ventricular fibrillation, can be as high as 1 in 6.
Wow.
15% or 16% per year from time of diagnosis of such.
So these kinds of electrical malfunctions, for want of a better term, in the heart, why do they occur? Is it all age-related generally, or is it just happenstance?
It's essentially in most people. Again, it follows coronary artery disease, essentially plumbing issues. Those blockages can lead to overt heart attacks or silent heart attacks that can leave enough scarring in the heart muscle to disable the cardiac function, so your pump function decreases, but also the structure itself of the heart muscle wall is no longer normal. You have an island or islands of scar in the middle of normal or almost normal heart muscle, and that interface between that scar-like tissue and the normal tissue creates electrical gradients that can bring about the ventricular fibrillation.
So almost like a short circuit.
Exactly. And essentially, as opposed to the pacemakers, which actively bring the heartbeat up, the defibrillators are acting by stopping fast rhythms. And traditionally, the main intervention has been to deliver a shock that essentially resets all the electrical activity of the heart cells.
So it's like a reset on a computer.
Exactly.
Or something.
It's pretty much like in the movies, you know, pedals on,
they put
everybody
the
clear.
On.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, these devices have been for about 40 years now implantable.
Let me get this straight. For 40 years, we've already been able to implant these.
Yes.
The pacemaker for the slow rhythm.
The pacemaker actually for even longer than that.
Even longer.
First.
That's for the slow rhythm.
Yeah.
And these defibrillators for the fast rhythm.
Correct.
And there have been, I had no idea they've been implantable that long.
They have been implantable for that long. There is excellent science to show that they are essentially mainstay of therapy to prevent ventricular fibrillation. Because, you know, if you have ventricular fibrillation, your chance of making it to the hospital and back home is less than 20%.
Wow.
So medications don't work very well. By no means as good as the defibrillator. So they have been at the forefront of therapy for quite a while now. The way the implantable cardiac defibrillators have come about being used essentially followed on the heels of pacemakers. You know, to have a heartbeat controlled with the currently available technology, you need to have some wire get to the heart. So this is how transvenous systems have developed around the need to pace. that's the technology that the defibrillators picked up on, and they essentially modified the pacing lead such that, that you can use by coiling, threading some special circuitry on top of the wire that goes to the heart, boosting up the battery that's lodged in the can that's surgically implanted at the chest wall, not inside the chest wall, but underneath the skin.
Yeah.
Essentially, you use a similar technology to deliver a shock should one's heart go too fast in an abnormal rhythm.
So this system that you're talking about has the pacemaker as a part of it and the ability to shock the heart as well.
Traditionally, the implantable systems have had a built-in, even if only backup, pacing capabilities. Now, the newer technology that we have started using at Upstate, which we're here to talk about, the subcutaneous, all subcutaneous implantable cardiac defibrillator.
I'm going to stop you there.
Yes.
Subcutaneous implantable defibrillator. Let's help us understand when you say subcutaneous, how is that different than what you were doing before?
So before, essentially, we would get access to a vein under surgical conditions.
You would surgically go in and find the
vein.
Yes,
and thread the wire, at least one wire to the heart under x-ray, and screw literally the tip of the wire in the heart muscle at one end and in the other in the can that contains the computer chip and the electronics, the battery to control.
And where would that sit? Where would
the generator would sit at most of the time the left chest wall under the clavicle, right? Essentially, the size, traditionally the size of a matchbox.
Just under the skin in that case as well?
Just under the skin for the traditional defibrillator. The only thing that would be under the skin would be the generator. The leads, the wires are traveling intravascular to the heart. And obviously, they are made of plastic and metal. There's, like with everything that's man-made, there's some small risk of something going wrong, a risk of mechanical or electrical problems related. And obviously, if one gets that intravascular system infected, the system will have to come out because the metal and the plastic would not be able to defend themselves against.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Upstate's HealthLink on Air. I'm Linda Cohen here with cardiologist Dr. Treyan Angel and registered nurse Amy Tetrol. We're talking about this new implantable defibrillator. So how is the technology different now, and what is the benefit that we're receiving from it?
So for about 10 years now, people have tried to use the all subcutaneous, all underneath the skin, generator and conductor and wire.
So that system. Nothing has to go down
so
into the heart.
So nothing has to go inside the heart. The risk of the procedure is much smaller because the whole thing is lodged under the heart. It's all made more robust than what you need to have to wriggle through a vasculature to get to the heart. So essentially at this point, it's already been used in Europe for quite a few good years. It's been long approved by now by the FDA for use in this country. And we have the capability of using this a new device, new technology, where essentially you have a, let's say, deck of cards-sized generator that's lodged at the lateral side of the left chest wall, in lower in the armpit, let's say. And from there, you thread underneath the skin, all underneath the skin, the conductor that you bring about to the midline, to the breastbone, and then up for a technique that's called tunneling, where essentially you just allow passage through the fat underneath the skin of a metal wire, and you have a couple of sutures, one at the top of the breastbone where the end of the conductor lies, and then as it makes a turn towards the side of the breast, towards the generator, there's another suture there, and then that's pretty much it. That's the implant. Now, with all these devices, because they are meant to address a life-threatening condition, you want to test them. So you literally push the patient with us as a backup, plenty of backup in the lab, into ventricular fibrillation to assess the appropriateness of the therapy.
So you check out and you make sure that this
yes.
device is working after
we
put
test
it
fire
in
it
place.
After we put it in. And that's the whole procedure.
Yeah, amazing. Amy, why is this so different than what's happened before, and why is it important?
I think it's important for the listeners to know that there are options for each of them, and important for them to know that within the upstate community, within the Syracuse community, that those options exist and that there's a dedication from our physicians not only to seek out this new technology, but to apply themselves to the training and to learn what needs to be done for these patients, and also for the institutions have made that dedication, that commitment to provide these services for our patients so that there are options, as Dr. Engel has said, either traditional types of ICDs or for patients that might not be appropriate for, or they may have a special need, that the subcutaneous ICD may be a better option for them.
So getting back to that whole notion of this versus the, the earlier ones, this has less potential complications. Is it also more effective?
No, it's not known to be, at least to date, more effective. It's at least as effective as the implantable defibrillator. Obviously, it doesn't have the pacing capabilities of the implantable defibrillator, so that we don't consider people who would have a need now or prospectively for pacing for subcutaneous defibrillators. But there's a.
So when you say that, you mean you wouldn't necessarily use that for people who have the slow rate?
Some people have both the slow rate
and
problem
the
and
rate.
The fast rate problem. And for those, at this point, the only good
solution.
Alternative would be the transvenous old
style.
The
one that goes all the way into the heart itself.
Right.
But the point is, this is new technology. And have you done many of these, and what are the results that
we
you found?
Actually just started doing them. We have done a handful of them to date. But with very new technology, we have to get up to speed with training personnel and stuff like that. But I think Van also talking to what may consist, hopefully, just as an early impediment to this taking off is also the fact that though it's FDA approved and the CMS has no problem at
the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services,
correct, seeing this as standard of care therapy, just like the old style defibrillator has been.
So they have approved it.
Right. It's all well approved.
And
it's
insurance will cover.
It's long not considered experimental therapy anymore. However, commercial insurances still consider it experimental.
So if you have a private insurance,
right,
you might have some issues with coverage.
So that has actually to date been the main restricting factor in providing this therapy. Now, I expect that as local insurances learn more and more about this and feel more comfortable looking around them and seeing what other people are doing, this will also grow accepted in that kind of...
Now, how you were talking about the procedure in some senses into how it's implanted very graphically in terms of where it's located. Is this done outpatient, and is it done under local anesthesia? How is this actually done?
It's done on what we call observation outpatient. So there is a overnight stay following this just to make sure that we can provide the patient with enough pain control. Because of the three incisions, but other than that, it's like I said, a lower risk procedure than the other one.
Very low
patient
risk.
Is expected to go home the morning after.
And then you do this test to make sure that it's
that's
functioning
during implant
properly
at the time of the procedure. Yes.
And does the battery last? We have a little bit of time left. Is the battery meant to last a long time?
The battery is meant to last 4, 5, 6 years.
And
yes.
Then, if you need that replacement, the battery just gets replaced.
Very good question. We cannot take the battery out of the can. It's all welded titanium. But you replace the can as a whole, and you leave the wire in place. Advantage being that way, not only do you get a new battery, you also get the newest generator technology.
Sounds very exciting. Well, I want to thank you both so much for coming in. My guests have been Dr. Okay. Trajan Engel, Assistant Professor of Medicine, specializing in heart and vascular conditions, and Amy Tetrault, registered nurse and the Associate Director of the Heart and Vascular Center at Upstate Medical University. Once again, thanks so much for sharing this new technology. I'm Linda Cohen, and you're listening to Upstate's HealthLink on Air.